appreciate that, Dr. Reeves. You have time just to field any questions that y'all might want to ask to him about this lecture or anything else that may have popped in your mind about it. I did fail to point out those cards here at the beginning. Some people prefer to, you know, precisely word their question. If you want to write it down, you can do that, and we'll make sure it gets passed up here and we can read it to them. You can also be thinking about things you might want to write down and talk about later with somebody else if you want to leave contact information, something like that. But anyone like to ask Dr. Reeves a question, and I'll just let you point out people you'd like to address.
How does your Christian faith influence how and what you teach in the classroom as far as electrical engineering goes, or doesn't?
Well, it does. In my field, I think the assumptions that underlie it are so well compatible with Christianity that I don't really have to fight a battle to, you know, shoehorn or somehow reconcile my Christianity with what I teach. So it doesn't necessarily look a lot different on the outside from what other professors might teach and the way that they teach it. Maybe just a few little things about how I might say something or about something's importance, something like that. It kind of gets more into the peripheral issues, though. Like, for example, I teach a class on random signals and systems. And so when I talk about randomness, I don't talk about something that's somehow utterly indeterministic, as though God is not sovereign over it. I just say random just means we don't know it ahead of time. So, you know, just things like that I've kind of thought through about saying it in a way that is consistent with my view of God's providence over the world and things like that. If you ask me things about careers and stuff like that, then you would start to see my Christian worldview come into play and what I recommend to people and so forth. So,
may I ask a follow-up question? Mm-hmm. Do you believe quantum theory is inconsistent with Christianity?
I'm not an expert in quantum theory. What little I do know about it, I don't think so. I think it's just another accounting for the phenomena that we observe, and yeah, so I don't have a problem with it. But I'm really no, very little.
Possibly with certain interpretations of quantum theory.
Yeah, definitely with some interpretations.
I think you said you're, I guess, an engineer, so you would have to believe in some sort of scientific method for evidence. Do you think that all the evidence we've gathered so far justifies the belief in, I guess obviously you do, for Christianity, but why do you think that there's enough faith or enough evidence to prove that, you know, Christianity is the right religion?
Well, first of all, I don't go about trying to prove that using scientific kinds of approaches, I guess. My way of thinking of it is probably more on the philosophical end of that than, say, you know, the test tube in the lab kind of thing.
The scientific evidence would have been the best way of proving things exist up in, you know, now.
Yeah. Well, people like to use the word science because these days science is so well thought of that it gives credibility to every field. So there's social science, and there's this science, and there's that science. Everything's science, you know. But so if you want to use it in that broad sense, yeah, it's science. But I think of that a little bit differently from things like logic and so forth. But I guess in essence, it boils down to understanding the person of Christ and who he claimed to be, and the fact that his claims and his account of my own condition match up so well with what I see to be true about myself and everybody around me. And so So I guess that's kind of the short version as I look at who Christ is and who he claims to be. And then I find that everything that he taught is true in terms of everything I can observe. And then those things where he speaks on issues that I can't observe, I say, well, he's a reliable guide on that as well. And so I trust his authority on those things where I can't observe, because I believe that I believe his claim that he was God, that he is God.
Do you believe he broke the laws of physics? I mean, if you're a scientist, well, an engineer, you're supposed to teach it. You teach laws of physics. They cannot be broken. So you think that the laws of physics were broken for one man or one line somewhere?
Well, I'd say God is the author of every law, and there's different ways of looking at it. You can say the laws of physics are simply God's a manifestation of God's ordinary purpose in this world. And so ordinarily, in fact, in the vast majority of cases, I drop something off this table, it falls because it's God's purpose to enforce an order to things. Occasionally, for various purposes, he chooses not to follow that order. And whether you call that breaking a law that he himself is implementing, I don't know if that, that might be a little bit hair-splitting as to whether that's breaking a law. But I also think that the very fact that he would do something differently is intended to get our attention about those things.
The book you mentioned that's in the library, in case we don't get around to going and getting that and reading that this weekend.
I mean, you don't have anything better to do, dude.
Maybe it's a teaser when I go get it tomorrow.
Okay. Just so you can sleep tonight.
Right, yeah. You mentioned how it's an incubator, Christianity is an incubator for some scientific exploration stuff. You remember any of the couple points I made there?
Yes. And in fact, if I'd been really diligent, I would have printed out a little outline that I have and would have acted like I was doing it off the top of my head. So let's see if I can remember some of those. First of all, that there is a distinction between God and the creation. If you think about, there's some religions where there's not a distinction between God and the creation. And so in one manifestation of that would be animism, that says that there's spirits in the trees. So if you go cut a tree down, you might be angering the spirit of the tree or something like that, or the god of trees or something. And so you never know. The creation may be hostile to you, and you might, trip across something and do something that might lead to some kind of curse on you. So that's one kind of thing that it does away with all that. We are given clear instructions that the creation is ours to steward, and that we're not going to find, something hidden in the tree that, well, we might find something, but it might be bees or something, but not some spirit or something. And the other thing is that, we're not somehow desecrating God himself by messing with his body or something if the creation is thought of as like part of God. So there's a very clear distinction between God and his creation. And that opens up the freedom to discover and experiment and so forth. Another thing is that there's a connection, and I mentioned this in the talk, there's a connection between the concrete and the abstract. And the fact that we can model things with math and it actually works. I mean, there's no reason necessarily to think that the abstractions that we come up with would have anything to do with the world around us. Christianity gives us a reason to believe that because our minds are equipped to have concepts that relate to the thing we're given to do, and that is to understand and rule and steward the world. So that's another one. Another one I'll mention is one that everybody kind of takes for granted, but for no particular reason, in philosophically, and that is that there is continuity and purpose in the world, and that what happened in the past has something to do with what might happen in the future. How do we know that we don't live in a random world where, and I tell my class this every once in a while that one of the implications of Christianity is that when you learn this formula for this concept today, one of the words that are concepts in my field is convolution. Everybody runs screaming to the door when they hear that word because it's a hard concept mathematically. And I'll say, well, if you work really hard and learn convolution, you can be confident that tomorrow when you come into class, it won't be an entirely different formula. It's going to be the same one. Because God has a purpose through history, and so we'll see continuity in those things. And there's nothing you can do to prove that experimentally, scientifically. And if you think you can, you say, well, I can do an experiment that says if I do this once and I do it again, then if it happens the same, that just sort of demonstrated it. But the very fact that you are doing that, you've already assumed the answer because you're saying that what I did at this point and what I did at this point have something to do with each other. And how do you even know that? So that can't be proven. Those are just a few of the things that make it. Oh, another thing is to say that the creation is good. So it's worthy of our study. It's not an evil thing that's against us. And so it's a good thing for us to uncover things and study it and master it and harness it and so forth. So. Any other questions?
So you mentioned how like Paul, most of his like converts, he said like were unwise. So do you think having like higher education or being like exceptional in any way can like, hinder you?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that. I had a little safety valve in my talk for if it was going too long, I was going to leave that part out, and I had to use it. So I'm going to give you that part now. Okay, so yeah, I do think that education, not because it's more information, but the way we respond to education could actually be detrimental to our faith. But it's in the same way that if you won the lottery, that might be detrimental to your faith or something like that. Because it might be that we become prideful about what we have. It might be that we get a false sense of security about our own power or something like that. And education can sometimes prompt people to think that way about themselves. My biblical example, oddly enough, is the Pharisees. If you're familiar with the Pharisees, that was a sect of within the Jewish religion. They were very educated, very self-disciplined, and they were probably Jesus's arch enemies when he was on earth. And they were also very religious, it just so happens, but not following Jesus' religion, which is what I'm interested in. And so what happened was that because they were so educated and self-disciplined and so forth, and they followed all the rules, at least they thought they did, they really thought they didn't need Jesus, what he had to offer. And let me get the exact quote, because I'm not really good at memorizing and quoting very well. But when Jesus interacted with them, He said, those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. I came not to call the righteous, but sinners. Now, he wasn't really saying that they were righteous, but they thought they were. And so they thought they didn't need him. And he said, I didn't come for you. If you don't think you need me, I'm not here for you. And so the same thing can happen in terms of, you know, because of their education, because of their self-discipline and so forth, which generally, you do see those things tend to kind of correlate. People that can work their way through a four-year degree and then through graduate school or whatever probably are more disciplined than the average person. And so that probably means that, generally speaking, they get into less trouble. They're probably outwardly moral most of the time and so forth. And so you might think, well, you know, I'm good enough. I don't need Jesus. And so it could lead to that kind of a problem. But it's not because of the information imparted. It's because of the way we respond to it and abuse it. Yes?
Why do you have faith?
Why do I have faith?
Well, what is it based on?
I'm trying to think of something different to say than I said to him. when I read the Bible, which I believe is a historically accurate account of the life of Jesus, and I read that, and I encounter someone who I believe no human being could possibly have made up. And I believe there's enough historical evidence and confirmation outside of Scripture for me to say, you know, that this is not just a story that somebody wrote. The fact that his disciples were so changed, these are ordinary people who didn't have much education for the most part, fishermen and so forth, who became and great example of people who employed their minds far beyond their ordinary training and ability. You look at somebody like Peter, who was a fisherman, and then he writes part of the New Testament, and other of the disciples who wrote part of the New Testament. So these were not literary men, and yet they wrote books or letters that became some of the most influential literature in all of human history. And those kinds of people don't go out, change their career, their lives, their entire outlook on life, put their lives on the line, and ultimately die for something that they know is not true. So these people who were directly in touch with Jesus were radically changed by their exposure to him. And so the only thing that makes sense to me is that the account that's given in the Bible is true about him. And so as I read that account, I read of someone who is no ordinary man. And he claimed that he was from the Father. He was with the Father before he came to earth, and he was going back to the Father. He's God. And so whatever he says to diagnose my condition, I'm going to listen. And when he says that, Augustine said, he had read Plato and Cicero, I think, and he said, and none of them ever said, "Come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden." Jesus says that. And he has a remedy for my condition. And so that's kind of a nutshell version. Yes, sir.
I'll try to find this question best, but sometimes what you were saying earlier about it seems like those that are really educated are either not of faith or not really willing to speak of faith. I'd say among that, I sometimes see that. My dad also has a PhD as in physics. And he would argue a lot of the same point, maybe even more, to what you said earlier in his field, just from, I would say, grad school on, that especially them, that they have their minds are in the clouds and they think they're discovering the universe all the time. So they have pretty strong opinions about that. But there are some, just like you and just like my dad, that are of faith and that are that educated. And you were talking about how people listen to science. And it seems to me that even though maybe you aren't the majority, sometimes I wonder if there's a way to be more of the loud minority. It seems like in other things, sometimes the loud minority gets the say, gets the attention. And I was just wondering about how maybe there's how you're continuing at work, and then just if you had any ideas on how to use the fact that you are educated, that people probably would listen to you because you have a background mm-hmm. in a field of science that they would want to listen to because, well, I'm educated and I have something to say, and that usually attracts those that aren't as educated, at least to some degree. Yeah. How you're maybe looking to maybe be a little louder to some of that. Mm-hmm. But I think groups like this are nice, but sometimes I was wondering if there's any thought given to a broader, a little bit louder voice sometimes.
Yeah. Well, you know, there are other things that are going on besides this. And did you go to the panel 2 weeks ago?
I wasn't able to.
Okay. So some of you may have been there. There was a Christian faculty panel for Christian faculty called What We Don't Say in the Classroom, and Dr. Nelson Ford here was one of our panelists and the mastermind behind the whole thing. So that just gave us an opportunity to talk about the fact that
the statistics were stuff, but I know that there is a statistic that people do generally listen to people that are more educated. They take that to a high, even if they are educated themselves, a lot of time they just take you as a higher opinion. So I know that you mean like anybody can be a voice, but sometimes it helps to, at least today I think sometimes it helps to be more educated with a voice.
I just thought of an idea. I do have some openings for PhD students if you want to talk to me about that.
I'm gonna cut it off there. We'll try to keep these pretty quick in an hour, so that maybe you're interested in coming back to a future one, and you don't go, oh, crap, let's just go on and on and on and on. So we'll cut it off there. I know Dr. Reese has some time to hang out afterward. I haven't asked him, but I just told him he's going to. Keep asking many questions. And then maybe even more importantly, like things, okay, maybe not prevention, what we talked about tonight, there's just such a gauntlet of questions and issues that are so interesting and are so important. Why the heck do we exist? Wouldn't we just believe someone else are born somewhere else? What is this relationship of science and faith and thinking? And what about the problem of evil? What doesn't the Bible change? What about other religions? I mean, there's just endless questions. And people like Dr. Reeves, they live here. Graduate students are never allowed to leave the campus at all, ever. So there'll be those of us here this summer, again in the fall. If you're interested at all in coming more of these or getting a small group together to hang out, talk about some of the stuff, he'll buy you lunch, and write down the name, email address, something like that. Just leave it in the seat. We'll pick it up afterward.
Didn't you hear? Not many are rich.
Yeah. Just lay it down, brother. You got to lay it down. All right. Yeah. Let's thank Dr. Eves again. Yeah.